This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us. During this National Suicide Prevention Week, that's our topic today on the WPGM Community Forum, and we've taken the mic to Geisinger Medical Center to talk with Dr. Nicole Quinlan, a pediatric psychologist. She's going to talk about the problem today and how far we've come and what we can do and what you can do if you are perhaps feeling in a hopeless situation. Dr. Quinlan, thank you for being with us today on the program.
Let's talk first about the prevalence of suicide in society. What are the numbers? Are there certain groups more likely? What are the demographics of the problem?
So for especially for young people, adolescents and up through age 25, suicide is one of the leading causes of death, primarily because young people don't have lots of other health concerns that would cause them to be deceased. So we know it's a significant concern for our youth and young adults. It's also a problem through all the ages, and there are definitely some demographic factors that put people more at risk. We know that men are more at risk for completed suicide. Part of that has to do with the means that they choose tend to be more lethal. Older populations, so 65 and older, tend to be a greater risk, and that has in part to do with the exact opposite problem of our youth. They have more health problems. They're at later stages in their life with other stressors, and suicide becomes more, seems to be more of an option for them. We also know risk factors, heavy substance use, and we think that's primarily because that can reduce your thinking and logic and cause you to act on feelings more quickly before kind of thinking through the ramifications of them.
Just recently, there have been some high-profile celebrity suicides. And so, you know, to think that there's a particular one reason you would pinpoint, you really can't do it because, I mean, obviously, I mean, it wasn't about money problems for those people.
No. What we know is that it can be hard to predict who would be more likely to commit suicide. And part of that reason is it is a low base rate. So there, while suicide is a significant concern and it happens a lot in the population, the numbers of people alive versus those who actively commit suicide, it's what we call a low base rate. So it doesn't happen that often. But of course, when it happens, it's significant. It makes it hard to predict. But when people take steps to end their life, it can be for a variety of reasons. There's usually at least one, sometimes several acute stressors that maybe with some time and distance one could work through, but in the moment feel like they're insurmountable. So people are feeling hopeless. They're feeling that what is going on in their life, whether it's a depression that isn't resolving or, again, some stressors related to loss. Loss of a relationship, loss of a family member, loss of a job, loss of status in their community feels like something that they're not going to be able to get past. And those things, and that's what happens in the moment sometimes when you mix substances in some cases with people, alcohol or drugs, it makes you more likely to act on a thought and not think through it and wait for more clarity.
It's always interesting to me. I try to, you know, sort of empathize and say, now, what were they thinking? Where were they coming from? But would you say that's pretty much impossible to do unless you're there?
It is. And, you know, one of the reasons it's hard to do is, as humans, as any animal, we're biologically programmed to protect our lives. I mean, we're here and our goal is to stay here. And so for a person to do the opposite, to actively end their life, can be hard for the rest of us to wrap our minds around because it is a very different mindset, and it is an indication most often of significant mental health concerns. If you are thinking that life is not worth living, that means that something is very wrong. You're feeling very badly, and if you, those of us who aren't in that position, it's hard to make sense of that.
Is it more often chemical, you know, a mental illness type of thing that can take somebody to that point, or is that not even something you can determine?
You know, after the fact, when we look at you know, instance of suicide and trying to make sense of it. Yes, sometimes there have been longstanding mental health issues, diagnosis of depression, or, you know, bipolar disorder or schizophrenia that has been there for a while and maybe hasn't either been treated well or has been resistant to treatment. But there are plenty of cases of suicide that after the fact, everyone around them will say, we never saw this coming, they seemed happy. Sometimes those people have hit it well and have not sought treatment, so there hasn't been a diagnosis. But there are also times that it really is an impulsive action. I think I work primarily with teenagers, and there have been more than a few cases where it's been one major stressor, a breakup with a girlfriend, a fight with a boyfriend, a fight with parents, perhaps a failing grade, feeling like, you know, just got their license and got into a really bad accident and feel like this one thing that happened is more than they can handle. They're teenagers, they're impulsive, and they do something that they can't come back from.
And perhaps, at least with older people that may have a little bit more wisdom and life experience, you can kind of understand what it means and how you can come back.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the, you know, we often say teenagers' brains aren't fully developed, and that's true. Kind of thinking through both the ramifications of their actions and but also how to problem solve isn't there. And again, if you mix substances in there, even for older people who are having had an acute stressor and they've maybe been drinking that night or are using a substance, that logic, that reason can go out the window and an impulsive act may happen.
Let's talk a bit about how we can notice problems around us. Like you said, it's not always easy. They hide it. But first, why? You know, why do people hide it? Is there still so much of a stigma about mental issues that we don't want to be known as that person?
Yeah, so there is definitely still a stigma in general about mental health concerns and seeking help if you're depressed or anxious. So there's the sense of I don't want the doctor to think I'm crazy. I don't want my friends and family to think I'm crazy or that I'm weak. And especially with depression or suicidal thoughts, people may view that as a sign of weakness, that I can't solve this problem for myself. I don't want people to know that I'm feeling this badly. It's also not those aren't thoughts and those aren't conversations that are easy to have. So even if someone might want to reach out, trying to overcome that, how do I tell someone that I care about that I'm having these really dark thoughts about ending my life? I don't want them to feel guilty. I don't want to be a burden on them. And when we think about depression and we think about that sense of hopelessness, a lot of times and worthlessness, people feel they're a burden. And so they don't want to share those thoughts that are really burdensome for them with someone else. So they may feel that they're protecting the people they love by not letting them know just how upset they are, just how much they're hurting, and just what they're thinking.
And for, you know, probably the closer you are to a person, the more chance you're going to notice an issue. I mean, you know, with my wife or daughter, I can read them even if they're saying something else. But, you know, somebody further away, you might not, connect as well.
Exactly. And that's why when we talk about suicide prevention and, talking with friends and family who want to know how can I make sure this isn't happening to my teenager, my husband, my father? How do I, you know, what are the signs? And so, those signs are just that differences that if you are close with someone that you're noticing, maybe they're withdrawing. They usually would go out with you, go out with other friends, and now they just want to stay at home. They're not taking care of themselves, their hygiene. They're not doing the things they would normally do. Everything from just the basic showering, brushing their teeth, to even individuals that perhaps take a lot more effort in getting dressed up and doing their makeup, and now that's sliding. It's seeming like they don't care about the day-to-day things they normally would. Not caring about schoolwork anymore, or work if they are an employed adult. Not reaching out anymore to friends and family, but also making comments, even side hand, about, well, this won't matter anymore, or I want to make sure I got to see you again and tell you how much I care about you just in case something happens. Any kinds of comments that sound a little off, like someone is anticipating they won't be around anymore, giving away their things, writing down notes or messages of goodbye, even if they're veiled, is a significant sign that something is going on.
Okay. So we kind of need to be proactive if there's any suspicion whatsoever, or would you say even to kind of get people talking about the issue, even if you're not necessarily suspecting?
Yeah, and I think that, just like I said, for the person feeling that way, the hurdle of I don't even know how I would bring this up, I think a lot of people who may have worries about friends and family are afraid to bring it up. I know a lot of times I'll hear from parents saying, well, if I even bring up the idea of suicide, won't I be putting thoughts in someone's head? And that is entirely untrue. If someone is hurting and they're considering talking about it, you reaching out and saying, hey, I know sometimes when people are feeling badly, they sometimes have thoughts about, being worthless or not wanting to be around anymore, or even feeling like they don't deserve to be alive. I want you to know, if you ever have those thoughts, that you can talk to me about them. It's okay. Don't be scared about bringing it up.
Yeah, certainly people are aware that option is there. They're not going to say, oh, well, there's an idea.
Right. Yeah. This is not, you won't be putting a thought in their head if it's not already there. And if it's not there, and they have not been having thoughts about killing themselves, mentioning suicide is not suddenly going to make them want to do that.
Okay. But, worst case scenario, you just have had a conversation that didn't mean anything, but the person, at least you've given a chance.
Exactly. It lets them know that you're available to talk about it. You're not scared to talk about it. It's not a conversation that's off limits.
How far have we come in that stigma, would you say? Is that steady progress? Have we made a jump, or has it, 30 years ago, where were we?
I think we've made a lot of progress. I mean, just... And I can't remember if it was this year's or last year's VMAs. I mean, there was a major hip-hop artist that put together a song that had the suicide hotline number in it. And it was a song about feeling what it feels like when you don't want to be alive anymore and reaching out. And that after that broadcast, numbers to that line went up. So the fact that we have celebrities, that we have musicians, we have actors, we have actresses, we have artists saying, these are things that I've struggled with, and, don't struggle in silence, and please reach out, I think is, we would not have seen that 20, 30 years ago.
And I think social media kind of goes both ways. I mean, I've heard studies about how, it can bring you down, but it also is a way to share and to realize that you're not alone.
It is. And it is a bit of a double-edged sword. Social media lets people talk about these things and realize that there are others that are dealing with them. And that's where some of the anonymity can be helpful, because someone who might want to share what they're feeling but afraid to do it with friends and family can reach out online to groups and seek support. On the flip side, social media can add to people's stress, especially, with younger people and bullying, and the other side of the anonymity is that things can be said without worry about ramifications. But I think ultimately, in this case, especially when we're talking about risk and people needing to talk about the things they're going through, having that outlet that is easier for some people, especially younger ones, to use can be a benefit.
Okay. I know in my own life, I was sharing online, with my friends, my own situation and medication I was going to be taking. And people came out of the woodwork to say, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. It's good you're getting help. Telling me their own stories, it's just amazing how open people will be if they're, in that kind of a setting.
Yeah, and I think that's where bringing it up, when you hear someone else bring up the topic and you realize they're willing to talk about it, they're able to talk about it, they're sharing, you feel safer in doing that. And that's why, the biggest message I have, if someone is worried, if you are worried about someone, that they're feeling badly enough that they... maybe considering ending their life, the best thing you can do is talk to them about it, bring up the conversation, because if you open that door, people are more willing to walk through it and have that conversation with you.
And to someone that's, feeling the pain and doesn't want to go on, what would you say to them right now?
I would say that while it feels hopeless right now, that there is hope. And that if they can reach out to one person, even if it is calling a suicide hotline, even if it's using a text hotline to do that, before they take any action, because it can be hard in your darkest moments to see beyond the cloud around you. But there is light if you can get through that. And sometimes just if you can have someone else holding that hope for you, that can get you through those moments. But you need to reach out to do that.
Before we close, what can people do if they are seeking help?
There's both a phone, a national suicide phone hotline, and they've also had there's a text hotline as well. For some people, it is easier to text than to call, but both of those are helpful. And there's also local numbers, that crisis lines that people can use. And anytime we have someone in our office that has even had that thought pop into their head just briefly, we make sure they have those numbers. So if it comes up again and they need someone to talk to, that they can use those.
And that number is 1-800-273-8255, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. 1-800-273-8255. Dr. Quinlan, thank you for being with us, and we thank you, the listener, for tuning in.